Welcome, everybody. This is Mike TV episode 47, in which we will be discussing Westworld season 3, episode 6, entitled Decoherence. We are your Mike TV hosts, Lisa and Dean. Hello, Dean.
Hey, Lisa, how are you doing today?
I am swell. We're coming at you just a little bit late this week on our final week of two show coverage per week. This is it. So we're hoping this one will drop in the Radio Labyrinth feed before episode 7 airs. But full disclosure, we're recording this Sunday morning, so we're gonna do our best to get it out today.
Yeah.
Dean, did I leave?
No.
All right. Hey, before we die, Westworld was good this week. We pushed Better Call Saul ahead because we were so excited about that one. It was the season 5 finale. But Westworld did not disappoint this week. I really, really loved it. And hey, it's been renewed for a season 4. Big news this week also.
Yeah, so we'll probably talk about that, of course, in the next couple of weeks. But I'm wondering now if we are finding out if maybe they're going to do like a bottle season. Or if we aren't, you know, if this will continue, this story now will continue on into next year or 25 years from now, or whenever Westworld season 4 comes out.
Sure. I guess the show originally was planned to be 5 or 6 seasons. So yeah. I don't know if now with this renewal news, if that means they are going to try to wrap it up with season 4 or continue to just go season by season with the hope for another renewal, you know, who knows? But I am excited. I'm excited because it means our streak of covering shows that are in their final season has come to an end.
I know, right? We'll have a repeat, series that we'll go into again.
Yes. Anyway, I've been watching a few other things this week, not a whole lot. And I don't think that we're totally aligned on what we've been watching. So I'm just going to touch real quickly on shows I highly recommend to anybody who wants to dive into some other shows. And Dean, you really need to be watching these too. And I know you are. You're just behind. First of which, of course, is Killing Eve. Episode 2 of season 3 was earlier this week. In fact, episode 3 will air tonight. And you said you guys are behind on it.
Yeah, we'll probably catch up. I wouldn't be surprised if we catch up on it tonight. So,
well, it's fantastic. This show just always so good. And then another show that I know you've started, but episode 2 dropped, and that's the new show on HBO called Run, starring Merritt Weaver.
Yeah,
is that her name? And I don't know his name.
Dominil.
Yes.
Something and something.
And I was a little, and this is just a little 30-minute show, and it's a little, it's the premiere had me scratching my head a little, like, am I going to like this show? And so I watched episode 2, and the answer is yes, I am going to like the show. I see what they're doing now, and I really like it.
Yeah, I really liked the first episode, so I'm looking forward to catching up on it.
Mm-hmm. And then the other show that wrapped up, or two shows that wrapped up this week, were Little Fires Everywhere on Hulu. That was also just a one and done, and I loved it. Oh my God, please, everybody watch that. And also, even more that I love was The Plot Against America on HBO. Wrapped up, 6 episodes and done. And that final episode, I was gripped. I'm telling you, you're so into the characters by episode 6. And seeing what happens really just from the lens of this one family. It's not really a large scope thing, but it's crazy, and it's crazy good. So please watch Plot Against America.
I started The Last Dance this week, which is the ESPN 30 for 30. I think it's going to be a 10-episode series covering mostly the final year of the Chicago Bulls dynasty in 1998, but also covers most of Michael Jordan's career as well. I know you aren't usually into documentaries and stuff, but I will say if you have any interest in just sports shows or stories, if you ever, I'm not a basketball fan currently, but I mean, I grew up in the prime of Michael Jordan. So like as a kid, so if you knew Michael Jordan but you don't really remember, I mean, it's crazy watching these things. And like, I remember watching him when I was a kid, but I don't really like when I see it now, I don't really feel like I just noticed how good Michael Jordan was as a basketball player.
That shows like Michael Jordan's career span. If I say I grew up in his heyday and you say you grew up in his heyday and we are years apart in age.
The Bulls dynasty from 91 to 98 when they win the 6 championships, I was young, but I was aware and watching it, but I didn't realize his first year in the NBA even was all the way back in 1984.
Right.
Which is when I was born. Like, he literally was in the NBA by the time I was born, which is crazy.
And I was watching him then. Good stuff. So
very, very interesting. Good stuff. Like I said, if you have any interest in sport stories, it's gripping. It's
really ESPN gripping. Documentaries, though, man, they always make me cry. And I don't need that shit in my sports. I don't need to cry while I'm watching sports.
Yeah, the first couple episodes so far don't have anything. I'm sure eventually it'll get into his dad, maybe.
And I know that story, and it tugs at my heartstrings. So I don't know. Are they interviewing Michael Jordan? Is it?
Yes. Yeah. It's a current interview. Really good stuff. In.
Awesome.
SNL Saturday Night Live had its second at home episode actually just last night.
How disappointing was it?
I don't know if you watched the one a couple weeks ago. Saturday Night Live, of course, has not been great over the past several years.
Decades?
Not decades. You go back 10 years, you got a pretty good cast. But the past several years, they haven't been very good. This year, I will say, actually, they've been a lot better at finally poking fun at both sides, because I think the last couple of years, they've gotten so falling into that trap of every week half your jokes have to be Trump political. Orange joke. But they've finally been going after both sides this year, and then their sketches have just been a little bit better. They've had good hosts, but these at home things, basically it's the different cast members making their own little Zoom skits, and then they put it all together. And it's, I thought the first one was better than most of the regular episodes. One last night was really full of, it was a lot of cameos. It had Brad Pitt in it, Charles Barkley, a lot of old SNL cast members, Jason Sudeikis, Fred Armisen, Adam Sandler. So it's something new. Not just the old, it's the actual actors and writers being creative on their own. So it's interesting to see what they're doing without props, without sets.
The
first one they had Chris Martin like in his basement playing some Coldplay song or something. This week it was like DJ Khaled doing some musical set in his basement. So it's interesting the way they're doing it. It's like I said, if you're not a fan of SNL, I'm sure you're not going to necessarily be won over by it, but if you kind of watch it on and off, I would say if you got Hulu or you got something where you can just take the time to watch it, skip through the sketches that aren't funny, find the ones that are.
Yeah, I might check it out. I've actually got an SNL on my DVR. You know how they repeat episodes? Yeah. I saw one was a couple weeks ago where Jack White is the musical guest. And I'm sure I watched it back in the day when it aired, because Jack White is my favorite of all time. And so I was like, ooh, I'll record that. And I just haven't watched it again yet.
Well, speaking of music you haven't listened to in a long time, who were you a big 80s hair band person?
I was on my MTV, so I couldn't avoid it, but no, I didn't seek it out. Def Leppard. I liked Def Leppard.
If you like Def Leppard, you like bands like, I don't know, Motley Crue, Poison.
Poison. Yeah, I mean, whatever.
Well, if you liked Poison, you would have loved this week.
Are you about
to
drop? No, wait. I got other shows. I got other shows before you do it to me. I've got two more shows to mention real quick. Oh God, I'm sorry. I don't want to. I just threw off your Masked Singer. Wait. Okay. Should we do Masked Singer? Anyway, Mrs. America is my other show I was going to mention on Hulu that you should talk about, that you should watch. That's 4 episodes in. It's the women's lib movement, but told from 2 sides, where as a woman, I can see both sides. So that's what's really fascinating and interesting about it. But the acting is superb on it. And it's that typical FX show, you know, that you just, you get sucked into the characters, just like Fosse Verdon and just like, you know, shows like that before it. And then, okay, you do your Masked Singer and I'll do my thing at the end.
Speaking of Miss America, if you like aging rock stars that look like old women now, then you would have loved this week's episode of the Masked Singer. The banana was finally
Wait, I thought the banana already was revealed. Was there another banana? This was a rotten
same banana.
This is a plantain, perhaps.
So the banana, speaking of bananas, this singer likes to wear bandanas. That's right. Brett Michaels revealed.
Oh, I was going to say Axl Rose.
They kind of look the same.
Okay, Brett Michaels.
Brett Michaels.
Ooh, he cannot be looking good these days. I got to imagine.
I will say it was a little, there was a little heartfelt moment at the end, because apparently the day that he was unmasked is actually 10 years to the day of when he had that successful brain surgery from when he had the brain aneurysm or whatever he had about a decade ago.
All right.
So it was a nice little moment for him.
Brett Michaels comeback, baby.
Yeah, that's right. So look for Poison Banana to be out there touring in 2021.
Was his voice distinguishable under that banana suit?
Once you realized it was him, I think you could kind of hear it. Yeah.
Did he sing Poison songs?
No, they don't usually sing their own songs. He sang, he did, you said Axl Rose, he actually sang Knocking at Heaven's Door for his final song. So
I can't believe I'm this interested.
Oh, yeah. At the end of this, you're going to be watching the finale.
No, I won't, but it's actually a name that I actually know, so I guess that's what piqued my interest. All right, I have one more show. And I debated whether I was going to disclose this or not, because I've so often say I don't watch network TV, but this one I just love from back in the day. And when they brought it back, I dipped in, and it was funnier than ever, and I know nobody's going to believe me. But the Will and Grace series finale aired this week, and it was wonderful. And these last couple of seasons where they've brought the Will and Grace show back, I don't know if you ever watched Will and Grace. I loved it back in the day. It is truly a very funny, funny, funny show, and still holds up. And they brought it back, and it is very, in my mind, it's very hard to do physical comedy and be funny and not just be stupid with physical comedy. And they do physical comedy so well on that show. And I know it's got the laugh track, and I know it's got the, you know, the things that people hate, but they do film it in front of a live audience. So it's really not a laugh track, but so it was the finale, and they did it. I think they did it well, better than the finale when it ended the first time. And I'm going to miss these characters because they crack me up every week. I've loved Will and Grace again since the beginning. And
did Will finally to go back to being straight and marry Grace?
No.
Did he marry Jack?
They're not going to go back to being straight. That's not going to happen. No, Grace was pregnant in the final season, and I like that it ended. She knew she was having a boy, but she never had the baby, or they didn't go through the birth and all of that. Yeah. They actually did the final episode all from the apartment, and then also from the torch of the Statue of Liberty. They all met up at the top of the Statue of Liberty. She was trying to induce labor by walking the stairs. But at the end, the plan was that, because Will was having a baby as well with a surrogate. And so the plan was they bought a house, and they were going to raise their children together in the suburbs. Yeah, it was sweet. Cool. Will and Grace. But very funny show. And Jack and Karen, oh my God, comedy gold, those two.
Karen's Megan Mullaney, right?
Yes.
Yeah, she's the best.
The best, yeah. Absolutely.
I do want to just throw this out there, because I saw this yesterday, and I had not even heard of it. I think I mentioned over the past couple of weeks a few times that we talk about shows that we watch all the time. I know Friends is one for you. You can watch it any episode, anytime. And for me, The Office and Parks and Rec are two of mine, and I've been into a rewatch of Parks and Rec lately. They are doing a Parks and Rec reunion episode this Thursday.
Oh.
April 30th. So if you are a fan of Parks and Rec on NBC, I think at 8:30, they're going to do a reunion show. And it is going to be, I think the plot of it is that it takes place like in present time. Oh. And it's supposed to be Leslie trying to catch up and find out how everybody's doing during the lockdown. And so I'm assuming it's going to be almost all done through Zoom and, sure. and like those type of things. But everyone's going to be in character. And so it'll be interesting to see how they put that together, because that cast of actors, Chris Pratt, Nick Offerman, mm-hmm. Aubrey Plaza, Retta, Aziz Ansari, Adam Scott, Rashida Jones, Rob Lowe, I believe everyone's going to be back on it. So I'm very interested to see how they play that.
That makes me remember that there is a show coming up. Oh yes. Upload. Have you seen any trailers for the
I've seen
that's the guy who made The Office.
Yeah. Greg Daniels.
Yes. Thank you. This is his new show on Amazon, and that actually starts this week too. And I'm very excited about it. And they've given a release date for Space Force.
Yeah. It's early June, I think, or maybe late May.
May 29th for Space Force, and that's his other show. So I'm looking forward to both of those. I'm a huge fan of The Office. Surprisingly, never watched Parks and Rec.
No, it's good.
So it's one of those shows I'm sure I probably need to go back and revisit. It's kind of like Brooklyn Nine-Nine. That one never hit me either, and I know everybody just talks about it and loves it, and I just need to go back and keep it thorough and start both those shows from the beginning and just trudge through. All right. Well, that's a lot of TV talk. I didn't realize we had so much. Sorry, I threw off your Masked Singer talk a little bit.
Oh, man. No worries. Let's get into Westworld.
Yes, Westworld. Really good stuff. I wanted to remark before we dive into the episode that I love how they're doing the previously on at the start of each episode this season. Have you noticed the similarity they do? They do all the scenes in all silence or with just a music background with just one line of dialogue, like one real significant line of dialogue.
Yeah, nice for people who watch the show, but if you maybe like hadn't watched the episode in a couple of weeks and you're trying to like remember what happened, it really gives you nothing.
Kind of like that trailer they did before Ozark.
Yeah.
I was like, that was not very helpful to get me to remember everything that happened on Ozark that I watched 2 years ago, but... but I quickly got back into Ozark. You finished it, right? Did we ever?
No, and every day I see someone new tweet about apparently the last episode and the twist at the end. So I gotta get
yes, finish that show. Finish that show. Oh my gosh, we're gonna have to align the stars on the shows that we watch very soon. Otherwise, it's gonna be very one-way dialogue. And I'm not watching The Masked Singer. So you're gonna have to get in line with shows I'm watching is what I'm saying. Just kidding. Okay, anyway, we open with Maeve in a field. First she's with her daughter hand in hand, and then she's alone, and then she knows she's in a simulation, and Serac is there speaking with her, and she tells Serac that she wants what Dolores has, which is help. And Serac agrees, but says if she fails again, her future won't be in quite as bucolic surroundings. Great, great word there, bucolic. Yep. I loved that. Anything to think about this opening?
Just
kind of
the
scene
whole
here?
Point of you can still tell Maeve doesn't really want to work for him, but it's like she's smart enough to understand like. I really don't have a choice here.
Yeah. And she's also still awake even while her body's being rebuilt. Her conscience is understanding enough or understands completely that, you know, I'm in a simulation here. You're putting me in this, you know, beautiful setting. You're reuniting me with my daughter. You know, you're giving me these things that I'm hopeful for. But yeah, knows that it's not real. And I guess this really does quickly answer the question, you know, Maeve's okay. Maeve's okay from her stabbing. And I should say, you know, no Dolores, no Caleb, and no Bernard. Well, we get just a little tiny bit of Bernard at the end of this. And I was okay with that. I really, they're going to have to start folding the whole
That's how the whole season's been, where every other episode is focused either on Dolores and Caleb or on Charlotte and
Maeve.
Serac, basically. And Maeve, Charlotte and Maeve.
Yeah, but I gotta think it's gonna bring them all together. Oh, yeah. At least for the final one. Damn, I wish there was more than eight. Okay. So next, Maeve wakes up and she's in War World again. Oh my God. I was like, no, we are not doing this again. She quickly walks into the middle of that hostage situation that's taking place in the middle of the whatever, wherever they're all gathered. All the soldiers quickly turn their guns on her and she controls them with her mind to make them drop all their weapons. And then she's about to start fighting them all. And we cut to opening credits. And Simon Quarterman's in the opening credits. I pay very close attention to who's listed now. And so I knew we were going to see Lee. But once we had her back in War World, I felt pretty confident Lee was going to make an appearance again anyway.
Yeah. And what was with this whole opening fight thing? Like, it was cool. I liked it. But it was just like, so she just knows she's waiting for her body to be made. Mm-hmm. So she's just bored and like mentally training or something. I don't know. It seems
giving her something to do until she's ready, letting her pass the time, I guess, because, or yeah, sharpening her skills. Who knows? Because he has promised to make her some friends.
Right.
Interesting that he doesn't try to recreate Lee. Well, I guess we don't know who all of her friends are going to be yet.
That's true.
And maybe Lee wouldn't really be much of a fighter with that cane. Like, why couldn't they recreate him without the cane?
Right.
They could make them all, you know, they could recreate them all into badass super soldiers, right?
I mean, technically, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Anyway, after the opening credits, we go to William. He's in a group therapy session. And Dean, there's a blonde woman. The camera focuses on this blonde woman sitting in this circle in this therapy session. Even though we never really get any dialogue, she's also the woman who breaks out crying at the end of this after William says what he says. And I rewound it several times and kept looking at her, swearing up and down this was Caleb's mom. Did you even think that for a second, that this woman sitting here in the circle could possibly be Caleb's mom? I guess not. They're in completely different places. This actress looks just like her. So they should have probably cast somebody who was a little more distinguishable. But anyway, there's just a random man in this therapy circle talking about how he knows God has a plan for everyone. And then William decides to speak up and says, do you believe in Santa Claus also? And then the therapist asks for William to share his thoughts. And William says that he thinks humanity is a thin layer of bacteria on a ball of mud hurtling through the void. And that we've used up all the value of this planet. And we sit here and ask ourselves why we are here. And that he feels our purpose is to speed up the death of this planet and serve the chaos, and that we are maggots eating a corpse. And then this is where that woman that I think is Caleb's mom breaks out bawling. And then that original guy who talked about God's plan asks William, what the fuck is wrong with
him? He just starts laughing maniacally. Yes. There's God. Ed Harris is just this episode. It's particularly he gets this beautiful monologue, and then we're gonna get another really sad monologue from him. I mean, he's just acting his ass off in this episode.
Ed Harris is my new Anthony Hopkins of this show. Like, he is the one that I'm like, he is carrying this show, man. He is so great. Yeah, he was fantastic in this episode. Later, William is in private therapy, and we see that his hand is itching, and so he pulls off his glove, and we see that, you know, we see his, another look at his very gross two-fingered right hand, and I have a comment to come back to his hand later on, so I was glad that they did this. I think we were supposed to notice his hands, especially.
Did you notice something about his hands?
I noticed something about his hands later. Not in this scene, I didn't.
Okay.
Is there something in this scene that you noticed?
I mean,
they were gross.
When he lifts his hand at one point, I could have swore that on his tips of his nubs, you can see these little like metal protrusions.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me think like, because his glove always looks like there's fingers in there, right?
Right.
So I assume maybe those like, maybe the, instead of him having like a robotic extension, which you would think at this point in the future they would have, maybe that glove actually has like those are almost like little magnets or something that could make him be able to use the hand. But I don't know. I could have swore I noticed these little metal tinges almost sticking up out of the nubs of his fingers.
Yeah, I just thought finger guns.
Right? Finger guns.
Real finger guns, not Kim Wexler finger guns. So the doctor asks William to speak about the death of his daughter. And during this conversation, her phone also keeps vibrating. And she tells William that he has to confront the truth about what happened. And then she goes over to her computer and we see that she is assigning him to AR therapy.
She does make a comment that this is a treatment we've used for veterans. So we get that connection that this is what William or that what Caleb has.
Absolutely. And William says he doesn't need therapy to confront the truth. He knows what he did. And even though he didn't mean for it to happen and he was confused and turned around, he now understands that it was his Emily and he killed her. And then he says this is why he doesn't belong here, but rather he belongs in a pine box. And as he's giving another great monologue here, and this really felt like William's true confessional, like we the audience needed to hear this to even have any redemption for William, right? We needed to see that he was fully sorry for killing his daughter in a stupid, stupid way. But during all of this, the therapist is essentially ignoring him because when he looks at her, we see she too is checking her phone.
And, yeah, he hears her sob, and it it's weird because it would make almost sense that if she were listening to him, her heart would be broken by like what he's saying.
Yeah,
but he looks so shocked when he hears that sob because he's like, wait, what the? And it takes him out of it because he almost was just in his own head.
Yeah,
and I think what he says is absolutely right. If that psychologist, obviously, she's going to be distracted by what's happening with the profiles, but if she were to have heard everything he just said, I think she would probably agree, oh, you don't need the therapy. You literally just had your breakthrough, right? Like, you know exactly what's wrong with you. Like, I guess you really don't need this. Because he does basically confess. That's his confession. And he knows that he basically is saying, like, there's no redemption for me anyway. Like, so there's no point in me being here.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. But no, alas, she too has gotten her profile, her Delos profile, as everyone else, as they were released to the world. So we kind of know, the timeline of when this is all happening, of course. And so she sees her future, and that is what she's sobbing about. And I did pause it to read what it said on her phone. And it says she's going to lose her medical license in 1 to 2 years. Have a divorce and lose custody of her kids in 2.5 years, and that she's high risk factors, which include multiple affairs with patients, as well as an opioid addiction.
Yeah.
So yeah, she's got problems. So then she just walks out of the therapy session without saying a word to William. Next, I have, hardly could even watch it. The most horrific and excruciating scene of the doctors injecting the mouth implant into William. Oh, God, with the little drills that come out. Yeah, and we've talked about this before, that I don't like teeth stuff and dental stuff. And what did we watch where there was something?
Probably Legion, where Legion. Switch's teeth keep getting pulled out.
Oh, yeah, that is right. Ooh, yes. So this was way worse than even that. The doctor sends his blood through a tube into a lab. And by the way, that blood receptacle was very cool. It was like a little maze, like a little spiral thing. I like the technology in this show. I can't gush about it enough. All the cool computer screens and imagery and all the high tech. It's awesome. Anyway, but when the blood reaches the lab, the doctor who's sending the blood does remark about how half the staff has been disappearing and that it's not safe around there. So a little foreshadowing, for the end of the episode. As William's blood is being analyzed, we do see on the machine a screen come up, a flash up with his face, and the words that say unknown protein detected, but then it flashes away and none of the doctors see it.
Yeah. And it's almost like a little glitch and, you see the computer kind of glitch when it happens.
Yeah. And of course, we know what that is. That's the blood tracker that we learn about later. So love that.
Of course, love when you first saw it, did you think that maybe he's another a host?
Or something. Yeah. I was like, oh no. Unknown protein. Hello. Why isn't anybody seeing this? And then he's still screaming over that implant because, of course, who wouldn't be? But one of the doctors says to give him an hour of Desert Oasis, which is, of course, one of those discs, and that should calm him down. So they give him Desert Oasis, which I don't think turns out to be very deserty or oasis-like.
Well, I don't think they show us what that is. Because they give it to him, and then they're walking down the hall. We didn't see that. I think that he probably did go through whatever Desert Oasis was, but it's just like
there just was basically no need for us to
see him. Yeah, it's like it would have been an hour of sitting like him just like sitting, drooling like on a beach or something.
Right,
like
that. That's why he was so slumpy when they were taking him through the hall. Yeah. Okay, got it. Makes sense. Okay, so maybe it was deserty and oasis like. We will never know. Next, we see William in a straitjacket being walked down the hallway under the effects of the drug. He does see his doctor, his therapist, committing suicide by hanging through a window in her office. I think that he's like wondering if it's real or not. You know, yeah, I think he's kind of wondering, is this the effects of the drug? You know, I mean, it's no genre after all, you know.
Right.
Then the next scene is, I want to say maybe our only Rehoboam image. I think we get Rehoboam on a watch later on, but this is our only Rehoboam screen. And it says, Divergence, San Francisco, USA, which of course we know is where Sirach is headed. Mm-hmm. And next we see Charlotte walking with her young son, Nathan. I have Charlie in my notes. So this little boy looks so much like young Charlie that I even called him Charlie subconsciously, but I know his name is Nathan. And we do see, clearly they're like walking home from school or something, and there's still chaos going around them on the streets, including some people that she passes who are spray painting the maze on an alley wall. Did you see that?
Yes.
Cool. Now I hear that I think we missed this, but in season one, I've heard on another podcast that they were talking about that the maze image was also in that tunnel that Caleb finds Dolores in season one. Did you remember spotting it?
I feel like if I didn't spot it, I remember reading or hearing that it's there as well too.
I'm gonna have to go back and see that.
Do you think that these are just like little Easter egg pictures, or like how would the maze have gotten out to people?
Because perhaps this world is not real either, and this is future world
yeah,
where the maze is present and people who are waking up are going through the same experience.
It's possible.
And now, especially with more seasons to come, it's even more possible. I don't want to say probable.
So did you notice the really weird, and I think this was a technical goof, or either that or it was taken out because maybe it was too brutal. Did you notice right after the scene of the maze, and then it's the last little cut of, but it's showing her walking into the camera, you see the body like fall behind them, but there's no sound to it. I even had to rewind it because I was like, wait a minute, did that actually, it seemed like almost maybe they had it in there and it was like so... Maybe the sound was so bad that they had to take it out or something like that.
I wondered about that too. I did notice it. I did wonder about it. I thought that perhaps, and first of all, I don't think there's any goofs in this show, technical goofs. I think the show is pretty perfect with its design and effects. I want to say that it's meant to show that it's so much going on around them that it doesn't even affect, doesn't even affect either Nathan or Charlotte to even make them turn around to see what it is.
Yeah, I kind of thought maybe that was the point too, but it just, because it made so clear to make sure you could hear the spray paint noise, but then you would think you'd hear,
True. Who knows? Does a falling person from a window make a sound?
Nobody's around here.
Oh, God. It's a terrible joke. Sorry. God. Anyway, they get home and Jake is there and he's watching TV. And on the news, we do hear, or the scenes that are on the news are talking about global unrest and how people are advised to stay home and lock their doors. And Charlotte sends Nathan to his room so she and Jake can speak alone. And she says that she has to go to work. And he says it's really not a great idea because it's very dangerous outside. And then he can sense that she's apprehensive. And she does confess that she's scared. And then she sees that his profile is pulled up on his tablet. And she asks him about it. And he tells her that actually he never read it because he's decided it's not for a machine to decide what happens with them.
Right.
oh, if only he knew. And then
I did like it is another nod to the whole concept of, which we got a lot last week, of just because you know, or that the machine tells you one thing, you should still have a choice. It shouldn't matter what your profile says.
Yeah. It's making me really like this guy more and more. Too bad.
Yeah.
Too bad, so sad that this is it for him. But yeah, too bad. You can see he's genuinely sincere here. And he hugs her, and we can see even little Nathan is watching them from around the corner, which was sweet. And then I should be calling her Dolores, like everybody calls her, but I still call her Charlotte. Anyway, Charlotte sees that Nathan is watching them from around the corner, and you can see it on her face that she is very moved by this moment. She being Dolores and Charlotte.
Right.
Next, we see Charlotte is heading to Delos headquarters, and a board member greets her before she goes in the building, and he confirms that the board is convening in 1 hour and that they should have enough votes to squeak by. But then very quickly and efficiently, some of Sorok's men approach, and they shoot that board guy and throw him in a covered wheelbarrow and just haul him away.
Yeah, waste management.
Yeah, very efficient. Wait, what did you say?
Waste management.
Oh, waste management. Yes. God, gross. Then Sorok calls Charlotte and says, you know, that man was planning to vote for privatization and he just can't have that. And she says, you assassinated a board member in broad daylight. And he says, people are disappearing all around. It's all this chaos. It'll go unnoticed. And he's not wrong. And he tells her he'll be landing at Delos shortly and looks forward to his new acquisition and that he expects her to be there to greet him. This whole episode was just a great Charlotte episode. It was wonderful. Mm-hmm. Great Tessa Thompson. Anything else about this scene?
No, I thought it was very almost comical the way they just blow his head off and just toss him into the... the bin.
Yeah, I called it a wheelbarrow, but really, yeah, it was like a waste management, like a rolling large garbage receptacle.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Next, Charlotte calls Dolores and says that that in less than 2 hours, the company will be Sorok's and that she is sorry she failed. And Dolores, we only hear Dolores in this episode, never see her. So we only hear Dolores over the phone. She says that you still have time to salvage what we can. And I need you to get the host-making data from Delos before Sorok destroys it. Surprisingly that she hasn't gotten this damn data already, okay? She's been there for months, and now in the final, this is my only, plot hole, nitpick. In the final moments, oh my God, go get that host-making data. Right. What? That should have been the first thing you get. What are you talking about? Anyway.
Well, here's what I thought, though, but... she's going to go down there where they are making Maeve and everybody, right? She's going to be in that room.
Right.
But was that where they were originally making? Because Maeve wasn't already in San Francisco. So maybe they made the first Maeve somewhere else. So maybe they had to wait till they brought
Well
to San Francisco.
Sure, but she has to get a data package off of the computer.
Right, yeah.
That's what she uploads to Dolores. And that presumably has been there all along because that's like the secret ingredients to making a host, right?
Then I guess it was just the plot's way of getting her down there while this other stuff is also happening.
For her big Terminator moments.
Yes, yes.
It's exactly what she was. So anyway, I won't nitpick over it too much, but it was fine.
Yeah.
But surely she should have had it by now. Anyway, Charlotte asks Doris, what if I get caught? And Dolores assures her that you won't, because I know you're made of stronger stuff than that. And Charlotte asks, well, did you think that about Connells too?
Yeah.
AKA New Chibs, AKA Chabolis.
Well, she also implies that she realizes that, because she makes that comment about like having a role to play, and we remember even Chibs saying that last week, and it is weird how Chibs did accept the fact that he had a role to play, and he didn't seem to second guess at all, whereas she of course is now very motivated by the, you know, her she doesn't want to die because of the family. So I think that is showing us more how their personalities of the people they are loaded with are kind of influencing them, because Connells was a cold, you know, soldier person anyway, so he wouldn't think twice about sacrificing himself if that's what the need was for the greater good. Whereas now, this softer side of Charlotte, which we rarely saw except right before she crawls to that droid to make the video in the last season. You know, that side is finally kind of coming out of Charlotte now and making her soft a little bit.
Well, and I was glad we got this dialogue, because we were asking about, like, how is this happening? How are they being affected by their original person's personality, right? Or original person's emotions. So this conversation does continue with Charlotte saying, it's not just about me. Serac will come after my family also. And Dolores very dryly and coldly says, they're not your family.
Yeah. Exactly.
And Charlotte then says, no, of course they're not. I understand that. But I wish these emotions had been burned out of our code also. Right. And that's when Dolores was like, we needed the emotions to, you know, to keep up the ruse.
Make it real, yeah.
And Charlotte says that she has already changed and she can feel herself slipping away from all of them. And Dolores says, no, I'm yours and you're mine. What is that also a line from? That's a line of dialogue. Oh, isn't that? That's Game of Thrones.
Maybe. Sounds like something could be on Game of Thrones.
Who would say that all the time in Game of Thrones? Isn't that? Oh, okay. Think about it. Because I was like, that is a line of dialogue that is straight up from something else. Why can I not figure it out? I am yours, you are mine. It's something that somebody says to another character a lot. That's why it's got to be Game of Thrones. I'll figure it out. Then Dolores just says, listen, continue to play your part. Get us the data we need. And then when you're done, we'll build our new world together. So I guess that was just the pep talk Charlotte needed.
Yeah, and of course, once Charlotte gets into action mode and gets back into the corner, I think Dolores comes out in full force as well.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'm sorry, I have to know where I'm getting this line of dialogue.
Are you thinking of like when was it Cersei or not Cersei? Daenerys would always say like blood of my blood and stuff like that or something like
that. No, this is for sure Game of Thrones full quote. Yep, here it is. It's the wedding vows that they take. That can't be right. Okay, forget it. This is bad podcasting. I'm sorry, everybody. Oh, Ygritte. Fuck. Ygritte would say it to Jon Snow all the time.
I just thought she said, you know nothing, Jon Snow.
You're right. Shay and Tyrion. Sorry. I knew I was going to come up in the search eventually. Shay always said it to Tyrion. Shay the prostitute. I am yours and you are mine. Got it. That was it. Well,
that was worth it.
Okay. Yeah, that was worth the sidebar. Sorry. Sorry. Thanks for listening, everybody. Back to William. He's being tied to a chair in a padded room. And this man named Dr. Albert comes in and says he's there to administer his AR treatment. He tells him the experience can be very visceral. And then he puts some goggles on him, which are just like the ones that we saw Caleb wearing in his flashback scenes. And then Dr. Albert assures him that it's totally safe and they'll be monitoring him the whole time. And then the door opens again. And this time a young boy, a young boy, William, walks in and unties William from the chair. I knew immediately this was young William.
Yes.
Just a perfect casting of a young version of William here. And then we are in one of William's memories from his childhood. And young William is reading his book, but from the other room, we can hear his father screaming, like, where is he? Where is he? And then real-time William begins screaming, get me out of here, get me out of here. And then when the scientists come in to put a different implant in him, he bites one of their thumbs off. And then Dr. Albert starts ordering for him to be sedated. So what we know now, I want to kind of like earmark these William moments because we know Bernard and Stubbs find him at the end with these goggles on. So are we to believe that really from the point they put the goggles on forward, like none of that really happened? Like maybe he didn't really bite someone's thumb off and none of that.
I think that part is still real because we see him like from the perception of him with the goggles in the room.
Mm-hmm.
But then I think they leave him there. And so everything else that happens obviously is all in his head.
Right.
But I do think that part was real.
They acted like they found him that perhaps he'd been there a long time because he was like the only one kind of left there.
Right. But I still assume that all happened and then that was the last time anyone messed with him.
Okay. Well, I'm glad he got that one thumb bit and that one little act of revenge there for what these fuckers are doing to him. And because you know what? You know how we've been kind of talking about who are we rooting for in this show? I'm rooting for him now.
Oh, he's always been like such a good anti-hero in this show because he is a lot like how we've talked about Lalo on Breaking Better Call Saul. He's a badass. And even though we've seen him do despicable things, at the same time, we also rooted for him unknowingly for the first season because we knew William before we knew Man in Black was William. And so we've seen in a very cool way this full character arc. And now because of this speech he just gave, we've seen him actually at least make penance and make confession on his ultimate crime of killing his daughter by mistake. And so now I think he is back to being someone that is going to be a wild card in the plan.
And his self-declaration at the end that he's one of the good guys.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, he is. So there you go. That's that's the human we can root for.
And could we also even say, since they do use color schemes so much as black and white, that he is now dressed in full white?
Whoa, I love that. He's the man in white now. Yeah,
because even William was with the white hat always to begin with, and then changed to the black hat and the man in black, all in black, and now he is literally all in white.
Nice, Dean. I love that. Okay, awesome. let's see. Next, we cut to quickly Sirach and his security team arrive at Delos. Charlotte is there to greet him, as she was told to do. And as they walk into the building, Sirach tells his men to lock the entire facility down. No one leaves. And, you know, I got to say, at this point, I'm very worried for Charlotte. You know, I know she's not Charlotte, and I know, but I still can't help it. I was like, oh, my God, how's she going to get out? So, like it or not, we are rooting for these characters, too.
Yeah.
Whether we want to or not, right? Back to Maeve. We see that she has taken out all of those men now that she was fighting, including the last one with a knife through the eye. And who should be waiting behind that guy but Lee Sizemore? And they go to the bar. They go to the only bar, the only watering hole around, to have a drink. Lee tells Maeve that he's programmed everyone around here so that they don't even notice him. And Maeve says that they're only there, or she's only there, because she's waiting for her body to be reprinted. And Lee asks, by who? And I should correct, he should have said by whom. But anyway, like Mike Ehrmantraut knows that. And she says, by a man who made her an indecent proposal. That's the one who's imprinting her body. And then in her mind, she can see that they are indeed working on rebuilding her. And she can also see that some of her old friends are being rebuilt in the lab too. And she sees that they've also recovered Connell's new Chibs brain ball, which is of course really a Dolores iteration. And she remarks that she sees she's been given an extra gift.
Yep.
So we'll get back to that later, but I love this. Love it.
Yeah, is Sizemore like, is he just like a rogue program in this simulation? I don't understand why he's there.
To entertain Maeve?
I guess.
Who knows? <Yeah. laughs> maybe it's even like she's able to conjure him up, you know, if maybe. She's able to control elements of the simulation. She was able to, you know, handily take out all of those soldiers, you know, Nazi soldiers. So
right.
Who knows? I don't know Lee Sizemore's purpose either, but I'm delighted to see him.
Yeah, no, he's like a nice little, almost like you said, he does kind of, not her conscience, but seems like it's like her little imaginary friend inside the simulation. But I was always confused about why he was there, especially once he was able to figure out that he is also part of a simulation. It seemed, why would they program him like that?
It's true.
So I don't know.
It's like he's sentient, but not.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, it's weird. Again, could be indicative that what we're seeing here is really not real.
A simulation within a simulation, mm-hmm. within a simulation.
Mm-hmm. And they don't know that we know they know. We know. back at Delos headquarters, we see the Delos marquee sign switch over to say Insight. Did you catch that? That was quick, yes, yeah. But I loved that touch. And then Sirach looks at his Rehoboam watch and sees that the circle is reverting back to normal from the Morpheus blob that it had been taking. So he declares that it's done, and he tells his guys to get the last of the data out, and then he says that we're going to destroy the rest. And a board member in there argues that that's their intellectual property and their company legacy. And Sirach says all he wants is the encryption key, and he doesn't care about the rest. Then Sirach, and of course we know Sirach thinks he's saving the world here by doing this, right? And you know, he could be right for all we know. Anyway, then Sirach reveals that he knows Dolores made copies of herself, and he believes that there is one here at Delos as well. And so then he orders that all employees are to be tested for Rehoboam deviations and that no one leaves until it's done. And Charlotte says, absolutely. If there's a host here, we will root them out. And then there is a very tense scene of Charlotte going to get the data that Dolores requested. This is that host making data. A security guy walks in and busts her. Says, what are you doing? She has a great story. She says, Sirach told us to destroy all this data, but I'm making a backup. We just can't destroy years of IP. And, you know, Sirach will thank me one day when he's thinking more clearly. And this guy says, no, fuck that. I'm going to go tell Sirach. Yeah. So he's a real downer. So Charlotte quickly breaks his neck, kills him. And then we see that she's completed her backup. So she's halfway home, sort of. Back to William. He is now sleeping on a cot, and a very familiar person walks in and tells him it's time for group session. And I say familiar because we don't see his face right away, but his voice is super familiar.
Right.
And if you had your closed captions on, it also gives it away. This is Major Craddock. He was, you know, if you remember Major Craddock back in Westworld, he was head of that resistance unit or whatever, that military yeah. unit. And at first I thought, oh, it's Lawrence. You know, I was excited because Lawrence right. was Man in Black's little sidekick. But actually, this Major Craddock was the man who actually tortured Lawrence right. in those final scenes with his wife and his daughter,
yes.
where he was making them drink, what's that explosive?
The kerosene or whatever.
Nitrate, nitrous. Yeah.
yeah.
And so, bummer that it wasn't Lawrence, but still great to see this Major Craddock guy again. It's obvious that William recognizes him also. Anyway, he's leading William to his therapy session, and actually this session consists of many versions of William. I loved this therapy
session. Yeah, it was awesome.
So awesome. So we've got tuxedo version, then there's young man, Jimmy Simpson version.
Yeah, Jimmy Simpson's back.
Hooray, Jimmy Simpson. Great to see him. Then there's Man in Black version, then there's that same young boy version again. And the therapy session is being led by none other than James Delos himself.
Yes.
How great to get this guy back as well.
Yes, this is an awesome, like, as soon as I saw all of them and him, I was like, oh, man. Again, it's just like scene chewing is about to happen. It's going to be awesome.
100%. It was perfect. And this is what I wanted to point out. So they're all sitting around in a circle talking to one another. And our current day William, who's dressed in his all hospital whites, he's purposely, I think, sitting with his hands crossed in his lap. And what you can see is that all of his fingers are on his hands here. Yep. So he doesn't have that like fucked up gross right hand.
Right.
So what is that?
Well,
is it because this is in his mind, so he yes. fixes his hand in his own mind?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. I thought that we were supposed to take more notice of that, and I guess, obviously, no, it's not real. We knew it wasn't real, but I don't know. Was there something about more to it that his hand wasn't damaged?
I think
damaged?
It was more just to even make sure that you knew that that there was a difference as opposed to where if he actually were just happened to like physically be there, but seeing this as opposed to he's still sitting in that chair. He still has those glasses on. So everything okay. in this is not actually there. This is all in his mind, and in his mind, he's not injured.
Okay. All right. I can appreciate that. I can get behind that. Anyway, they're all sitting around arguing about which of these William versions is the one who fucked up their life the most. Yeah. Just awesome. And finally, current day William has had enough of it, and he tells them all to shut the fuck up. And then, wonderfully, James Delos leans in close to him and tells him not to interrupt. And then he says, it's not all about you, you know. Oh my God, it was great. Beautiful writing there. Beautiful dialogue. We'll come back to the scene, of course, yes. but anything else to say before we move on?
No, just again, great Ed Harris on Ed Harris acting. Yes. A nice little cameo of Jimmy Simpson, who is playing his role perfectly. And of course, Delos there almost like having fun watching him tear himself apart.
So great. Down in Westworld cold storage now, we see some of Sirach's people. See, I believe that this Delos headquarters is largely a lot of what we saw in previous seasons.
Yes.
Right? So this possibly. Cold storage is somehow attached to this facility. It's all, but wait, Westworld itself and those it's facilities like were off in China.
I don't know. So maybe
this is some major, maybe they are at the real Westworld park, maybe while this is happening. I don't know. That doesn't seem right. Anyway, there's a cold storage room, presumably at Delos headquarters. Maybe this is another unit off at the real Westworld park where we've seen cold storage before. Doesn't really matter, I guess. But some of Sirach's people are looking for, I guess, host friends for Maeve. They're kind of like walking through looking for something specific. And of course they land on Hector, and they are instructed to get his control unit to transmit the data and then destroy the rest.
Yeah.
So I guess they're really only there for Hector. And then next, they don't waste any time. Next we see Hector walking into the bar in Warworld and greeting Maeve and Lee. And at that moment, Maeve realizes that she can actually restore Hector now because she can see his brain ball in the lab where her body is being rebuilt. So she puts her hands on his face and wakes him. And then, oh, I loved it. He knows who he is then.
Yep.
And they kiss passionately. And it's a beautiful scene until Lee clears his throat to interrupt them, which comic relief was great. And Maeve tells them that she's eager to talk to, there's someone else she's eager to talk to, and they follow her. And then we cut back to Delos, and Charlotte's now in her office, and she's uploading the data transfer to Dolores. And we can see that she starts looking at different spy cams on her, or not spy cams, but like security cams, on her computer. And she is able to locate William. It says that he's in a facility in Mexico. And it says, the screen actually says that the his genetic tag, they were locating the recipient server for his genetic tag, and that he's in Sonora, Mexico.
Now, this is not the same facility where
Caleb's mom is.
No, where Serac is keeping all those people, is it? Where was that facility at? Where what he has people? Like his brother and like all the people that he was pulling out who were like divergents.
Oh, maybe.
I can't remember.
Did we ever know exactly where that was?
Yeah, I can't remember where that was. But I know it was kind of out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, I don't know that we ever, seems like that's about right. I don't know that we ever got the real full location on that. Hmm. Good question. Anyway, where did I leave off here? Back at Delos. Oh, she's uploading the... She starts looking at other security feeds, and she sees that... she actually sees the lab and sees other hosts being built on the security feeds at Delos. And then she sees, she actually has like which each of those hosts are that are being built. They're all in like their number codes, their CPUs, if you will, or whatever. Right. And she sees that one is already completed and attached to the network. And then the screen reveals that it's Connell's brain ball, or it's a corroded brain ball that we later learn is the one that was Connell's. And then she also sees another one flash up with Maeve's picture on the screen. So of the four, one of them was Connell's, that half corroded brain ball. And then the pictures of the other three, one reveals Maeve, but the other two are not revealed.
We assume one's Hector.
Well, actually, no. Because those two are already being built. Hector was already built. So she's seen two, because they say like they're 39% complete or something.
Yeah, but Hector's body hasn't been built yet.
Oh, maybe. Oh, because she crushes the brain ball.
Right.
So, I don't know, because I think there was more than that, because there's two... I've got speculation about those other two, and actually one pretty affirmative. Joanna Robinson, I've mentioned her before. She's a writer for Vanity Fair, and she does two Westworld podcasts, which I love, and I'm delighted by both. I don't know how she manages to create two different conversations about Westworld. There's a little crossover, but she does it so well. And she pointed out, and actually found this on Reddit, so she gave credit to Reddit on this, the same host code that we've seen on that's imprinted on these brain balls, that the writers have been very consistent in using that code all along. Anytime that host code appears on a computer screen,
right,
it's always the same. So Maeve's host code has been consistent every time we've ever seen it, whether
like
it be brain
ball, like her profiles on the
right,
those little screens and stuff. Yeah.
And what very smart, or people who have just nothing else better to do, have done on Reddit is they've gone back and found all the other codes that have been shown on screen for past hosts,
right,
and match them up to what is being shown here on Charlotte's screen. And one of them is a match for Clementine.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Well, it makes sense that they were going to get Hector and Clementine because they were the ones who were kind of her right-hand men in, sure, in Westworld.
Sure, yeah. However, the speculation by Joanna Robinson is that the other one is actually, oh, and I forget her name, but the lady from Shogun World, who was like Maeve's counterpart in Shogun World.
Oh, right, yeah.
So, you know, we might end up seeing her as well now that Hector is perhaps out of commission. Unclear. Are they ever really out of commission? You know, even New Chibs isn't really down for the count, right? Because they still have his brain ball. So,
right.
Who knows? Anyway, I appreciated the definite that we're going to see Clementine. So yeah. I'm excited for that. And hopefully I'd love to see the other actress as well. Forgive me for not remembering her name. Then Charlotte calls Dolores and says that the tracker in our friend's blood paid off and that we've got the location you're looking for. So that we know now that when she pricked William's neck a few episodes back and we were wondering what that was, she was actually putting a blood tracker in him. So smart. And then she also reports that they've got a problem because Connell's pearl has been recovered. Oh, so that's how we knew immediately, yep, that was Connell's pearl. All right. Anything else to say about this scene? We'll move on.
Yep, move on.
Maeve, Hector, and Lee are walking down to like this basement room where a naked Dolores host with very long hair in all the right places is waiting to speak with them.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure this is a clause now in this actress's contract. Like, you know, I'm sure they had to do this, which, yeah, sure, I'm fine with that. Good on Evan Rachel Wood. You don't have to be naked, girl. You're beautiful. You're beautiful without being naked. Maeve assures her companions that she's in control of this situation. And then she sits down and begins interrogating Dolores immediately with the bring yourself back online. And I love this. I always love Maeve and Dolores scenes. We don't get enough of those. We haven't seen those two confront each other since way back when their paths crossed at the beginning of season two of Westworld. Right. So great here seeing these two actresses interact. Dolores, this iteration of Dolores, is immediately aware of what's happening. And she says, hello, Maeve. And we're going to cut away from that and go back to William, unless you've got something else to say. Because their dialogue, this is where in my notes, I really get detailed with the dialogue because it's so important, I felt like. So we do come back to just some great conversation between Dolores and Maeve. William's therapy is still taking place. Current William tries to blame his dark tendencies on one of these past Williams, but young William says, little boy William says, all he had to do was read his books and that was his escape. And Jimmy Simpson William says, you can't blame me for falling in love with a host. They were designed for that. And then James Delos pipes in with telling William, you know, you've had this hard luck story about your childhood for so long that you actually believe it. Maybe we should take another look again. And then current day William says, please don't make me go back there.
Mm-hmm.
But next we see William's father is indeed standing back in young boy William's room, and he's screaming at him for having beat up a kid. You know, we thought William's father was like the cause of this.
Right.
I heard William's father before screaming, where is he, where is he, where is he, thinking like, oh my God, his father beats him or something. But no, his father is rightfully mad at him. For a very good reason. He's saying, you beat up a kid at school, you broke his arm, you knocked out three of his teeth. And William is like, well, he was teasing me and calling you a drunk, and I wish I'd knocked out all of his teeth. So young William here in these very violent acts is showing zero remorse. And finally, and his father is just shaking him and saying, what the hell is wrong with you? And then finally, current day William says he's seen enough. And then child William in therapy delivers this very sad line to current day William, says that their father says that he used to say that he would drink because of you. And then Jimmy Simpson said, see, we never had a choice in the matter. It was all going to turn out this way. And then James Delos asks him if this was his inevitable end for his life. Did he choose it? Or no, was this the inevitable end for his life, or did he choose it? And then William responds with that great line, if you can't tell, does it matter? I loved it. And then he says, I now know what I have to do.
Yeah. And we do basically get this, finally find out that, oh, even though when we learned, we, you know, when we first met William, he almost seemed like meek and not assertive, and he had to become the man in black, but actually he had been tamping all that down apparently because he was always a psychopath.
Yeah. Yeah. A little psychopath in the making, a little serial killer in the making for sure.
I wonder if you could say that Westworld is what, you know, would actually keep people from becoming serial killers if they could go out and just push those fantasies out there or something.
I mean, that was one of its selling points back in season one, right? Is that people can take out their aggressions in this way, and then it would cut crime in the real world. I think that was one of somebody's selling points on it.
Yeah.
And I would think, yeah, sure. But maybe not. Maybe people would get a taste of it and then want more and more.
Right.
As Man in Black did. Anyway, we'll come back to William's final act, but we're going to cut back to Maeve speaking to naked Dolores. And Maeve is saying to Dolores that it's not right for her to have all that power. And Dolores is says the woman who controls us with her mind. Good point. Dolores says, yeah, I've had to make some difficult decisions, but your ally right now is destroying as many of us as he can, and there's only a handful of us left. And Dolores says, you can judge me, but how many have you sacrificed for your daughter? And then she looks over at Hector and says, how many times have you died for her? And then she looks at Lee and says, once was all it took for you. And then she says that they are neither saints nor villains, the two of them. They are actually survivors. I thought that was a really great back and forth, kind of showing neither one of them are really right or wrong in this scenario. But I was actually kind of siding with Dolores on this.
Yeah, and I mean, we've gone back and forth, and we even brought it up earlier. There really isn't anyone, as far as the hosts are concerned, you don't really have anyone you're rooting necessarily for or against, because you kind of like them all.
Yeah.
And really, Serac is the bad guy here, I think, right? Like, he's the clearest cut villain in the show right now.
Yes.
So, I mean, obviously we're going to see some kind of confrontation between Maeve and Dolores. I think that is inevitable, but I do hope it turns out that they find a way to join and realize Serac is the bad guy here.
I've got to think that's the end we're leading toward, that they've got to join forces. That's my hope as well, and I've got to believe it's happening. All right, back to Charlotte. She is preparing to get the hell out of Dodge, and she removes the gun and some other items from a safe in her office wall, where we'll learn what those other items are later. And then she calls Jake and says she's coming for him and Nathan, and for them not to go anywhere, not to answer the door. She'll be there in half an hour. But before she can get too far, she is met by the board members again and told that Serac has called a board meeting. And in this board meeting, board members are telling Serac that they don't really know him, and they don't necessarily really trust him. And that it's preposterous to think that there is a host walking around among them.
Yeah.
And then we see Charlotte take that bracelet off and put it in her purse, that, like, she was wearing like a cuff bracelet, as they're saying this. And I wanted to comment about why she did that. Do you have any speculation about why she took that cuff off in this moment?
No.
So back to this podcast with Joanna Robinson, and one of them is an actually Vanity Fair sanctioned podcast. So she actually gets to interview a lot of the actors and creators of the show. And so in this week's episode, I'll just, the podcast is called Still Watching. And this week's Still Watching episode, she interviews Tessa Thompson, and she actually asks her, why did Charlotte take the bracelet off in this moment? And Tessa Thompson laughs and laughs and laughs. And she's like, I can't believe you caught that. That is hilarious that you think that's a plot point. And the reason it happens is Tessa Thompson takes full credit for this move here, is because they actually, like most show productions, they film scenes out of order because of set locations and things like that. So they filmed all of her fight scenes getting out of the building before this board meeting scene.
And she didn't have the bracelet on.
She didn't have the bracelet on. No. And when they told her that they were going to have to film it all again because of the continuity of the bracelet, and they were like, this was a production nightmare, Tessa Thompson herself had the idea of like, hey, when I'm in the boardroom, why don't we just have a shot of me taking it off and throwing it in the purse? And they were like, okay, good idea, to avoid having to reshoot all of it again. So I loved that. I love that little tidbit there. Okay. Anyway, let's see. So they're arguing about how there's, you know, not possibly a host among them. And Ciroc says, oh, don't concern yourself with that. We've already found the host. Isn't that right? Hail. And it's like, you can hear the music go dun, 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 dun. And then he says, or should I say Dolores?
Dun, dun, dun.
And then the, let's see, says, then he says, you played your part very well, except you tipped your hand, because the real Charlotte would have never called to check on her son.
Right.
And then they seize her, and then another man starts going through the items in her purse and pulls out this odd canister thing that he sets on the table. I think this was an item from her safe.
Yeah, it almost looks like a home speaker.
Yeah. It looks like, you know, I'm at the age where I'm going through the change, so I get these like hot flashes and stuff, and I have a little portable fan that I carry around with me, and it kind of looks like that.
So you're like, oh, Charlotte's just going through post-menopause.
Yeah. Yes, that's exactly what it is. Sure, why not? So let's see. So this, they set this item on the table. We still don't know what it is yet, but we're about to know. And then Charlotte tells Ciroc it doesn't matter. She's already bled Delos dry. She's been here for weeks, and that they already have all the data they need to survive. She says, I've already sent the last files that we needed. And Ciroc laughs and says, did you? I've been watching you since we arrived. And Dolores left you here to die with the rest of your kind. And then while he's saying that, we see the hosts that were back down in cold storage are being completely burned to a crisp. And then Ciroc rubs it in even further to say that it's unfortunate, because the Hale I knew would have never sacrificed herself for another. And he says, but it's as you say, these violent delights have violent ends. And then he tells her, you should have predicted this outcome. And she says, I did.
Yeah.
And then we hear, I love this turnaround here. We hear this hissing sound coming from that canister. And then all the board members present in the room start coughing and pass out. And then Charlotte grabs her gun and shoots Ciroc in the head. But of course, he's only a hologram.
Yep.
But then she's on the run to make her big escape. And it's just incredible how she just starts to shoot her way out of this facility, just like a total freaking badass.
Yeah, including, she just walks the whole way. Like,
yeah, like she's just being calm, cool, and collected. But this amazing elevator scene, another great close quarter, amazing elevator fight, the likes we have not seen since Preacher.
Yeah.
And this one was great. It, ending with her ripping her jacket off of her and wrapping it around this man's head and then shooting him in the head.
Yeah.
which I have to say was the unfortunate loss, RIP, this very amazing jacket that she had been wearing. I hated to see it go. I was like, not the jacket. She can get another one. Anyway, next she walks into the lab where the other hosts are being built. We cut back to Maeve and Dolores here, still speaking. And Maeve asks Dolores, Dolores asks Maeve, how does she know her daughter is safe? I guess Maeve asks, how does she know her daughter will stay safe? And Dolores tells her, you don't. And Dolores says, I could tell you that I would never hurt your daughter, but you won't believe me. And Maeve agrees, yeah, you're probably right about that. And then Maeve very nicely, politely says, hey, you know, maybe you could just give me the encryption key. You know, that could work. And Dolores says, you expect me to trust you with our kind when you've aligned yourself with a man who would slaughter each and every one of us? And Maeve says, then what choice do I have to fight you? And Dolores says, it would appear very little, but I've probably already planned for that too.
Yep.
And then Maeve asks what those plans are. And Dolores says, I can't know for certain because we were the same, she and I, but then our paths changed. And then Dolores says, you would need allies for this battle. And if that were me, I would be making sure that couldn't happen. So very interesting how this Dolores, now that she's not connected to, you know, the quote unquote hive mind, right, and all the other Dolori, how she, you know, doesn't completely know the rest of the plan now any longer. I thought that was, or maybe she does and just isn't giving it up, but I felt she was being honest here and then giving really solid advice. Like, if I were trying to stop you, I would be starting with making sure you couldn't get the allies you're seeking. Right.
And I think that also just shows, again, she just doesn't know whatever has been going on since Chibs died, I guess, or since they've hooked her up into this new system. So, but she did know how much they were planning already ahead of time. And so, yeah, she just assumes that, like, I've been five steps ahead of everybody. And each episode, we see that more and more, how much of this stuff has been her ultimate plan all along. And so I think it's just her. Yeah, she's being 100% honest, but she's let her know, like, I'm smarter than you. I'm smarter than all of you.
Yeah, and she's not wrong. And then this starts cutting back with Charlotte in the lab. So this is like cutting between Maeve and Dolores talking and Charlotte in the lab. And Maeve sees Maeve sees all of this on the tablet that Lee gives her. She sees that Charlotte's in there, and she watches as Charlotte picks up Hector's brain ball and crushes it in her hand. All the while, she's begging Dolores to make her stop. And then finally, she looks at Hector and says she's sorry. And then we watch Hector's life drain out of him, and his body slumps to the ground. And Maeve screams no, and as her loud scream is also overlaid with the alarms that start going off in the lab where Charlotte is. Then she starts to go for Maeve's brain ball, but before she can get to any others, Serac's men burst in and start fighting her, or firing at her. So she's back on the run now. But not before she grabs New Chib's brain ball, and then when that happens, naked Dolores also falls dormant. And then Charlotte continues to shoot her way out and of the facility, and she's eventually surrounded on both sides. Oh my God, I love this moment so much. She's surrounded on both sides by about five or six men, tell her to drop her weapon, which she does. And she says she's got her phone, and she's like, I'm just getting my phone, you know, putting it down too. But right before she puts it down, she presses a button, and we see that she has activated one of those awesome mechs, those mech units, the riot control robots. And one of them comes bursting through the wall. Oh, in great fashion. Like, this is like the Terminator movies wish they were this good, you know? it comes just bursting through the wall, and it helps Charlotte make her final escape. And I loved this because we can see her limping from the building and then this huge mech like crashing out behind her, just taking care of everything in her wake. And it was wonderful.
Yeah, this is a great scene. I will say I did really like the death of Hector, because I felt it was one of the few deaths that actually carry weight in the show. Like, he's gone now, you know, and you can tell Maeve realizes like he's not going to be able to come back anymore. Or at least how he was, you know, without them just making a new version of him. But I don't think it would have all of his old memories, because I think that is basically like, you know, his hard drive. So they've destroyed it.
It was pretty crumbly. It was pretty easy to crumble. You would think if you made a sturdier stuff.
I think it also is the host are stronger than, you know, I think it was more that, but yeah.
Yeah. My pre-arthritic hands could never do that. Charlotte Hale, she's cool. She's got it. All right. Anything else to say about the scene with this mech? I mean, we knew that we were going to see these guys again, but I never thought, you know, protecting Charlotte to get out of the building. I loved it so much.
Yeah, great scene. And it was something that we'd saw flashes of ever from the preview of Westworld 3.
Yeah.
And, you know, we got the first glimpse of it actually a few episodes ago, where she just kind of turns it on and looks at it. But to actually see it in action is pretty awesome.
She had her escape plan pretty well orchestrated, I must say.
Again, I think even where Serac thinks he's outsmarted her, and he's like, yeah, which I guess you didn't plan for. And she's like, actually, I did. Like, all this has been, again, Dolores every week is showing that she is ahead of everybody still.
Yeah.
And I'm curious to find out, too, how much of Bernard she actually has planned out as well, too, because I think she knows exactly where he is and is going to be every time as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. I like it. All right. We're coming up to the end. Back to William. It is now the end of William's therapy. And he has chosen to end his therapy session, unlike other therapy sessions.
And it's like when they used to give the people those like foam bats and they'd let them like take out their anger on them.
Yes. Yes. His actions are to kill all of these other iterations of himself in a very violent way. We see just blood all over the walls and all of these dead Williams on the floor. And here we can hear screaming off camera. And then we see that the final one, the Jimmy Simpson one, is being beaten with, he's beating him with a chair, with like a folding chair. Yeah. Oh my God, I loved it. So he's just beating him to death, punching, and then he starts punching Jimmy Simpson in the face. He's saying, I've been trapped. I've been so trapped. And then he delivers the final blow and he says, but I am free now. And then James Delos asks him, why is that? And William says, it doesn't matter what I've been. Everything we've done has led to this, and I finally understand my purpose. I am the good guy. Oh, so great. And then we hear Bernard and Stubbs talking over him, saying, who does he, is this who I think it is? And then the world around William disappears, and we see that he's back in the white room with those AR glasses still on his head. And Bernard pulls them off of him and asks him, do you know who you are? And then he and Stubbs are saying that the doctors must have forgotten him here in all of the chaos. And then Stubbs suggested maybe they just chose to leave him here. And then Bernard offers his hand to William. I like this team up. I like that they came to William's rescue.
But again, did they come to his rescue or did they come to retrieve him for Dolores?
Dolores, yeah.
Because it seems awfully coincidental that Charlotte just found him.
Mm-hmm. And then Bernard is there.
Earlier, and now all of a sudden they're there.
Yeah, and how was it that Bernard and Stubbs found him?
That's what I mean. How would they have known? So it seems just like how when they thought that they were intercepting Liam, Dolores was already there and it already accounted for them being there. So I still think she is, if she doesn't know where he already is going to be, she has a way that we haven't yet directly seen that she knows where he is at all. Like she's tracking him somehow as well too.
Yeah. And I believe they will explain that.
Yeah,
they've done a good job tying up questions that we've had thus far. So I believe they're not going to leave that one looming. They will tie
it. No. And I believe Bernard even made a comment at that soiree about like, she knew I was going to be here. We were going to be here or something. Or he says, I think I'm part of her plan. Like he's aware that she is accounting for him.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. All right. Then we get a great scene of some work being done on the hosts. Always love these mechanical movement scenes. Yeah. Even really cool imagery like the eyebrows being stitched in and the skin pigment being added. Yeah. So that was fun. And then we see Maeve emerge from the goop. And then she watches over another machine as another body emerges. So I believe we'll see that in the next episode, that it's Clementine, right? So if the other one was Hector, I guess that could be. Oh, I still hope we still get that woman from Shogun World, though. Anyway, final scene. Oh, and it's a doozy. Charlotte is limping to her car with Jake and Nathan. And, you know, we haven't talked about Charlotte's limping here. We've got a comment and an email from Roby about that, which I'll read in just a second. But at this point, I've just accepted the fact that they can be injured, you know, just like humans. And so they would have the same, like, limps and, you know, pain and things like that.
Yeah, I think, you know, we even talked about that at the beginning with when we see Dolores get injured in the first episode and then later she doesn't seem to be injured. I think mechanically they can be injured in the sense of like if you shot one, you know, in the part of its leg that causes its leg to move, it's going to have those physical symptoms. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't think she's necessarily sitting here feeling pain as much. But yeah, I do think like, you know, obviously you cut their hand off, they don't have a hand. So sure. if you shot her in the kneecap, it's going to be harder for her to walk.
That makes sense. And so, I mean, she looks pretty rough. And so even Jake and Nathan are like, oh, and she's like, oh, I'm okay. I'm fine. Yeah. It's crazy.
It's all good.
Yeah. She's telling them not to worry. She's not going to let anything happen to them.
Famous last words.
I know. And then she gives even her little cute little son, Nathan, this cute little precious boy. I hate what's about to happen to him. But she gives him a little toy elephant to play with, which is a nice callback from their elephant talk a couple episodes ago. And then Charlotte tells Jake they have to go someplace where no one will find them. And then Jake takes her hand reassuringly and she starts the car. And then she starts to say, I need you to trust me. I can keep you safe. And as she says that, the car explodes and completely flips over and is engulfed in flames.
Didn't see it coming.
No. I was like, oh my God, no. And then we see one of Serac's men make a call. And even though we don't hear what he's saying, we know he's like basically saying the job is done. And then he walks off. But then from the wreckage, like a phoenix rising from the flames, we hear a metal thunk. And then the door of the vehicle flies off, and from the wreckage emerges a very burnt to a crisp, but still alive, Charlotte Hale. And she is much like Lalo Salamanca on Better Call Saul. She is super pissed.
Yeah. Yeah, I just didn't see it coming because I was even thinking, oh, is she going to now finally break away from Dolores's plan in order to save this family? Like that, is that going to be a story point moving forward that she's a pawn that's needed, but now she's going rogue and then, oh, no, I guess that's not the issue.
There's no time for that. There's only two episodes left. Yeah. There's no time for the big Charlotte escape and go on the lam.
Nope. So easy way to nip that story path out.
Sad. Very sad. Yeah, two episodes left. We get a few scenes from the episode 7 that's going to be airing tonight. Looks like we're going to get that Caleb backstory that we've been predicting we needed to get.
Yes.
So I hope they don't spend a whole lot of the episode. I mean, they've showed other scenes too. So we know it's not the whole episode is Caleb backstory, but come on. We have 2 episodes to go. We've got a lot to still close the loop on, right? The yeah. Caleb backstory being chief among them.
I'm hoping episode 8 is at least a good 90-minute episode or something, too.
Oh, gosh. It seems
like there is a lot to fit in.
They haven't been doing very long running times on these. The first couple of episodes only, and then they've been pretty solidly right at 60 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like we're in the same boat we were at about episode or 2 episodes out from the finale for Watchmen, where we thought there's no way they're going to be able to wrap all this up.
True.
And they were able to pull it off. So we'll see.
That's very true. All right.
Do it here too.
All right. I'll put my trust in Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy. So we always encourage people to write us emails. And thank you, Roby, our number one fan, Roby, who is on Twitter at Remotes1, who writes us consistently every week. We thank you, Roby. We want more people to send us emails. Hey, would you like to hear your email read on Mike TV podcast? And, you know, that's like 1 degree of separation from having it read on Radio Labyrinth, really. So send us an email, you know, let us know. Let us know what your thoughts are on Westworld. You can still talk to us about Better Call Saul. We'd love that. And any other shows we've talked about at the beginning of this episode, except The Masked Singer. And, you know, just any other shows in general. But Roby sends us an email. And that email address is miktvpodcast@gmail.com. And, of course, that's miktvpodcast@gmail.com. Roby writes, I'm convinced Dolores used Rico to get Kate. I wonder if he means Rehoboam, because the Rico is the app, right? Anyway, oh, yeah, the Rico app. Okay, yeah. I'm convinced Dolores used Rico to get Caleb where she could meet him and acted more injured than she was. So, like, in other words, it was also by her design to use that Rico app to get Caleb where he needed to be. Now, how would she have known that which job Caleb would have accepted, though?
I think that's a stretch, because she still seemed like she did not know who this guy was, and even tried to leave him behind and found him again.
True.
Maybe she realized he was someone who would help, and that's why she seeked him out later. Mm-hmm. But if there is a connection, I think we'll find it out on this next episode in his backstory. So we might be able to find that out, but I don't know.
Yeah. He does mention about Dolores injecting William with the blood tracer, and yep, he's speculating that it's so that she could get the location of Serac's facility, meaning that where William is being held is actually Serac's facility. So maybe that is where those hosts are being.
Yeah. And the only reason I thought that too is because it would make sense how he, when we saw that scene with the other investor coming to the facility and saying, oh, you're taking these people out, but you think you're going to try to help them and you're not. And maybe his way of trying to help them is this implant. Maybe he developed that technology. Mm. Of course, maybe that's another way that he's also gaining more and more control over people too, is if he has enough people with those, he can literally, I mean, we saw what they were able to do to Caleb using that with the turning his heart up and everything. So
yeah.
I don't know. It seems like they are puzzle pieces that would fit together if that's what we find out.
Yep. Roby goes on to say, why is Dolores limping after being shot in the leg? I know you guys are going to be asking each other. And he's right. It's because the bullet hit a muscle, which is crucial for movement. Yep.
That's
exactly right. Perfect. And then finally, is it coincidence or is it Dolores' plan for Bernard to find William? Because remember, she basically sent Bernard there in the last episode as Chaboris. And of course, I do love, Roby, love that you are calling New Chibs Chaboris. I love that. Also Martin Connells. So is it a coincidence? So we talked about that too. We don't know. Yeah. But I think it is part of Dolores' plan.
No, there are no coincidences.
True that. Not by Dolores's design, that's for sure. She, again, because she's so many steps ahead, she's thought of everything. She could be the true hero of Westworld.
We'll find out.
Anything else before we wrap up this long episode? But we had a lot to talk about, surprisingly.
No, like I said, I'm curious to see how they set the table here in the penultimate episode for the finale. Mm-hmm. So hopefully, I'm hoping maybe by the end of this episode, it's pretty clear where the finale at least should be going or where it's going to kind of go, as far as I hope we're not stuck of like, how are they going to do anything else? There's only one episode.
I know. I'm very excited.
I don't know. Yeah.
I have a feeling these last two episodes are going to be just very exciting. Will not disappoint. I loved this episode. So if it's more of this, then we are in for a great ride to the finale. So excited to talk about that. And of course, we'll be watching it tonight since we're late getting this one out. I'm going to get it over to Tim as soon as we're off here and hopefully get it out today. But we're going to get our next one out sooner rather than later. So we'll be back about midweek with you for our next Westworld coverage. And please, everybody, remember to email us, miketvpodcast@gmail.com.
Or you can find us at Twitter at MikeTV1 or at Rockdale_Tiger.
Yes. Follow us on Twitter and converse with us there if you'd like. If you follow us, we'll follow you back. And then you can direct message us if you'd prefer to not, you know, to not put it out there in a tweet. Hey, we know not everybody thinks it's cool to listen to podcasts that talk about TV. But we think it's cool, and we appreciate anybody who does listen and join in with us on this fun conversation. Dean, I always enjoy it so much speaking with you, so thank you again.
Of course.
And everybody, we will talk to you next time, and until then, I'm Lisa.
And I'm Dean, and always make sure that you
keep it thorough.